Michael Gurjan, filmmaker, actor, director of Amerigatsi, is with us today. Episode number 765 of The Next Step, February 9th, 2023.
Hi, this is Susie with In His Shoes Ministries, welcoming you to The Next Step with Father Vazgen. Since 2008, we have been producing these podcasts on a weekly basis for those who are seeking practical and deeper applications of faith and spirituality in their lives today. Blending the most ancient traditions of Armenian Orthodoxy with the challenges of the 21st century, Father Vazgen brings a distinctive and unique voice to the Christian conversation of peace, harmony, and love. There's no need to check your brain in at the door. Armadoxy is a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Well, one out of three ain't too bad, right? Is that the way it goes, or should it be two out of three ain't too bad? The majority is the two out of three. I'm talking about the Good Samaritan parable, which has been the topic of our daily podcast, Armadoxy for Today. The Good Samaritan has a guy left for dead on the street, and you've got three people that pass by him. Two of them, one of them's a priest, and the other one is a priest wannabe, a Levite. And these are guys that are well-versed in religion and know their scriptures backwards and forwards. And these guys just see the guy and say, okay, we'll pray for you. And they just like take a hike, go on the other side of the street. And it's the Samaritan, the unlikely person. Unlikely, yeah, because back in those times, they didn't even talk to each other, Samaritans and Jews. And he's the one who tends to this man. Not only what's expected, if such a thing is even possible, because the guy's just a random, goes over and above and tends to him. And you can find this story in Luke chapter 10, much more eloquently said than I just did. But the bottom line is that the Samaritan, the one out of the three, does the right thing and proves to be a neighbor to this man. And this discussion's been a topic of our podcast this week, ever since we learned of the earthquake in Turkey. And I was reminded, the devastation is horrendous, and every day it's more and more. I believe this morning the totals were close to 20,000 dead, and it's obvious it's going to go up. Just reminded me of where we were in 1988. And interestingly enough, there's a fact from the 1988 earthquake that few people remember or maybe want to forget. Sadly, they want to forget it, is who were the first responders? Devastating earthquake, 50,000 people dead in Gyumri, Spitak area, Armenia, 1988. And the first responders, of course, were the Turks. Yeah, they were right over the border. It was only, you know, half an hour, an hour ride to get into the area. And they came. Not because they were Turks, not because they were Armenians, victims, but because they were neighbors, because they were people. And in a world where we're defining ourselves under polarized terms and everything, this is very important to remember. In fact, it's essential if we want to see the future of humanity. Jesus calls us to be this kind of neighbor. Look beyond the borders, look beyond the boundaries, skin colors, preferences, everything else that keep us apart, and realize that person is hurting. That person is somebody who looks like you, created in the image of God. And as I've shared many, many times, I think we as Armenians have such a big obligation to the world to share with the world the importance of the cross. When we talk about resurrection and victories, not everybody relates to that. But if I talk about crucifixion, I think we can all relate to that. Everybody has pain. Everybody has suffering. And these kind of experiences, when an earthquake, a devastation, hurricane, tornado, something happens of this magnitude, it brings home the point that we really have to reach out to one another. It's the only way we're going to survive. We'll be doing a whole show on this next week because, as you heard a few minutes ago, we have a guest with us today, Michael Gurjan. And also because I think in a couple weeks, it's important that we take a more reflective view. Everybody's talking about the earthquake right now, and you're seeing what's going on. In a couple weeks, people, well, I don't want to say they forget, but they start, their eyes start wandering elsewhere. And you know the big one's coming up. Yeah, Super Bowl. And I think next week I'm going to want something more to talk about than who scored what Beyonce wore, how she sounded. Yeah, don't get me wrong. I enjoy it. But, you know, next to what's going on in the world, come on, folks. You know, it's like the Facebook page, right? You put a picture of your grandkids, and then the next article is about the devastation in the Ukraine. You think that they're equal. They're not. What you caught on your fishing trip is not equal to the devastation that's going on in Turkey. And so you need some filters. You need somebody to edit this. And we hope that we do this on the next step. So that'll be coming up next week. Meanwhile, I want to just direct you to our In Issues webpage. We do take donations. Those donations get channeled through. We have people right on the ground right there, the Armenian Patriarchate in Turkey. And be sure that 100% of your donation will be sent directly for human aid. With that being said, Michael Gourgian, filmmaker, actor, director, Amerigatsi. You've heard me talk about this movie several times over the past year. Had a chance to see it a few months ago. And then the bigger opportunity came a couple days ago when Michael Gourgian stopped by the studio. We sat behind a couple microphones, had a conversation. Listen in. Well, we have in the studio today Michael Gourgian, actor, Emmy Award winner, author, director, and somebody who puts it all together in a brand new film, what came out yet last year, called Amerigatsi. And welcome.
Thank you.
Glad to have you with us. And I do want to mention that this is like disclaimer, he's also my cousin too. So I'm very, very excited to have you here. Michael, welcome. And first of all, let's start off with this Amerigatsi. I've had the good fortune of seeing it at a screening that was done in Calabasas a few months ago. Mm-hmm. What a fascinating movie, just on many, many levels, because it's from a time period that is probably undocumented by any other means. But also, it brings together a lot of ideas and concepts about the human being and human suffering in a way that we haven't seen. So first of all, let me get a little bit of background and you can share with our listeners what's the story about. And of course, without spoiling it for our listeners who haven't seen it, and also want to find out about you, what you've been up to, Armenia and throughout the world.
We were actually the opening night film at the Golden Apricot Festival this past year. Mm-hmm. And then we went on to Woodstock, we won the Grand Jury Prize there. Hamburg, we won the Audience Award. We've been to about a dozen festivals at this point and pretty much won every single one we've been to, which is very nice.
That's fantastic.
And this kind of comes back to one of the underlying sort of purposes of the film, or why we made this, I wanted to make this story, which is... you know, I've shown the film in Connecticut, in we're going to go to Fargo. I've shown it to audiences who are not Armenian. And those audiences have responded very well. And kind of the goal was, I felt like, I think it's important to make films that are about subject matters like the genocide and things that Armenians care about, but to find ways to make art that can help tell our story and invite in people who are not Armenian, and find ways to tell stories that resonate regardless if you're Armenian or not. So with this particular film, so it takes place the kind of basis of the film. It takes place in the late 1940s, after World War II. Stalin had reached out to the Armenian diaspora and said, come home, come back to Armenia, help rebuild your country. There was a lot of, you know, booklets that went out and things to kind of entice Armenians to come back. And many did, from Syria, from Europe, from Egypt. And there was also about a little over 300 American Armenians who went back to Armenia, repatriated. So the film takes place during that period. And like you said, it's something that is not... There are some books about it, some very good books. But it's a part of our history that hasn't really been explored so much, at least in definitely in not in film, the Soviet era. And the relationship between Armenians who are born in Hayastan and raised there under Soviet rule, and the diaspora. And, you know, I mentioned this to you before. One of the things that got me into the subject matter, I'd read an article about Akbars, about the conflicts between the two, you know, Armenians that have come back to the country and the Hayastansi. So this story takes place in that period. But I would say the movie isn't really about that. Mm-hmm. It's a story about a prisoner and a guard who works at the prison that he's in. The themes and ideas of the story are something that I've been told this by people. This film could take place in any country. Yeah. It doesn't have to be Armenia. There is a lot in it. There are layers of things that help kind of explore and show our culture and our language. And there's so many things. If you're Armenian, you see it, you go, oh, well, you recognize this, you recognize that. But the story doesn't depend on that. And that, I think, is something that, you know, we'll get into more kind of the... I don't want to say spiritual side, but there's a deeper side to what this film is about.
A human side.
Yeah, and that really came from a story. A Ukrainian friend of mine, Voronin, he had told me this story many years ago about someone he knew who was in prison in Ukraine. And the guy could see from his cell window, he could see into, there was an apartment building near the prison. And he could see into the windows of this one apartment. And there was another a man living there. And this guy, for 10 years, would watch this other guy's life and kind of, in a way, survive this experience by vicariously having this other person, you know, and seeing. And that story always fascinated me. And I thought, there's something, you know, poetic about it, very deeply human about it. So that's the kind of the foundation of what Amerikatsi is really about, is this relationship between a prisoner who can see outside of his prison into an apartment and a couple that is living in that apartment. And so it starts to explore some deeper ideas about what is life and how often we sort of take for granted when we're living life, you know, when we're outside sitting in a prison, looking in going, ah, God, I wish I could live like that. Mm-hmm. But when we're in the midst of it, we often forget what we're blessed with in our lives.
Very powerful. So. And I, you know, when I saw this, what came to my mind was the movie Reds by Warren Beatty. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing that in the 70s when it came, I think it was 70s, young kid. And I remember walking away from the theater saying, hey, I just watched this love story, but I learned about the Russian Revolution without knowing. I thought that was fantastic. Like without telling you, this is what you're going to learn, you learned it. And I felt the same way with Almedigatsi. It's not about Armenia, but you're learning this story.
Right. Well, you know, like in conceiving of films, and you know, I've always wanted to do something related to my Armenian heritage. And, you know, another, think about, okay, there's obviously the Holocaust and that kind of thing. But then another example is My Big Fat Greek Wedding. Okay, here's a comedy that is showing people about being Greek in this fun, you know, way. And I realized that for me, that's not a film I would make because it's throwing it in your face.
Right.
And this, just this situation of a prisoner. And so a little more about the story. The film is about an American repatriate who comes back, repatriates in 1947, 1948, right away is arrested for an absurd charge. And a lot of the film kind of explores the absurdity of Soviet bureaucracy. And so he's arrested right away, thrown into prison, and then discovers that through a hole in the prison wall outside of his cell window, he can see into this apartment. So what I wanted to do was, instead of making My Big Fat Armenian Wedding and try to like show non-Armenians, here's who we are, here's who we are. This is a story about a guy who goes back to Armenia to wanting to find his roots and ends up finding the Soviet Union, ends up finding just Russia and Soviet bureaucracy and not what he's there for, until he ends up in prison. And then with him as a voyeur, we see into this apartment, and there we start to see what we see the man and his wife and the food they're eating. We hear the music they're playing. We hear the relationship, you know, the people that come over. Slowly, I start to give people more and more what I want to share about our culture, but in a way that's not in your face, but hopefully people are leaning forward to go, I want it. What is that? What is he eating there? What are they saying? Why do they do that? Why do they, we have in the film, I think, I'm pretty sure I'm the first film to have an atamatik party, or what's the Western, where they put the rice on the kid. Anyways.
The kid has a new tooth, and
you put the things in front of his.
You put the different things, and what he's going to select, that's what he's going to be.
Yeah. So, like details like that, I wanted to share those kinds of things, but in a way that wouldn't be force feeding this to people. And I think it's, you know, so far we've seen it's working with the festivals we've been at. The responses almost are better from people who are not Armenian.
Well, yeah, like you're talking about just the human condition to want to be. I mean, here's a guy who's going back because he wants his identity. He feels his identity. He's post-genocide, so he's the next generation after genocide, and he's got a chance to connect and find identity there. Mm-hmm. And he goes and it blows up in his face, and he doesn't give up. I love that idea that, you know, it would have been very easy to end that. Of course, there'd be no movie there.
It's a short film.
Yeah, short film. But most people would say, I'm not going through all that trouble, you know. Yeah. Where's the American consulate? Let me get out of this place.
But, right.
It's just a fascinating study of human, the human drama.
Well, and also, you know, you said this on Sunday, I think. What do Armenians have to teach the world? What do we know that we can share? And I think it's something in that realm of knowing survival. Mm-hmm. Survival, or, look, do this to us, do that to us, but standing back up and going, okay, picking yourself back up and going, I'm going to make the most of it.
Yeah.
I'm going to make the most of this situation. And that in the film, there's lots of, like, the guy's cell as the film goes on, it slowly evolves it from a disaster to he turns it into his home.
Paradise, yeah, it was. Yeah.
Yeah, and that, I think, you know, you can see that with, you know, being a type of people that have been through so many bad things, and yet we're still here. We're still finding a way to, you know, and not just feeling bad about ourselves, but laughing and enjoying ourselves. So that essence, I think, is something I was hoping to convey with this story.
Mm-hmm. I think that comes out really, like what I said, he could have given up, but he stays through and he goes through. It's grueling. You know, if as somebody who's watching it, we're the voyeur on his life, and we're sitting and watching him go through this and going, hey, man, you know, like, to give up.
Yeah.
But you've captured so many different aspects of Soviet life. Mm-hmm. That, and this is also another theme that I've shared with listeners, that when we talk about the Armenian Genocide, the buy-in there is that it's against the Turks. And really, you know, we have no qualms against the guy on the street in Turkey, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's a real important lesson that we can learn from how the Jews deal with the Holocaust. You're not against the German guy. You know, the German guy on the street is not the enemy. But there was this enemy that was Nazis. Mm-hmm. And you've successfully brought about that idea of that there's the Soviet state. Mm-hmm. That kind of just got it wrong. For all the idealism they had, they just got it wrong.
Right. And that is something that is done, not just represented as Russians. Mm-hmm. It's the Armenians as
exactly.
well.
Exactly.
That the ideal and the ideas of the Soviet Union, as much as, you know, communism as a concept and, you know, okay, maybe it could work. It didn't. You know, this is a pretty, it's hard to argue that the Soviet Union, you know, a lot of bad people suffered quite a bit under that regime. And it's not Russians, though. It's the Soviet, that infrastructure, that kind mm-hmm. of bureaucracy and what it did to people. Mm-hmm. And I think this is another big thing about the film. When I first wrote it, it really was more just about Charlie's experience, the repatriate, and him going and finding his roots. And the more I worked on it, the more I realized, no, this is also the story of the guy in the apartment, mm-hmm. Who's played by an actor named Hovik Kushkarian. He's his story of being someone who is Armenian and proud to be Armenian and is trying to live underneath this this government, this ideal that is trying to strip that all away from him.
Yes.
No, you're not Armenian. You're Soviet. You're a Soviet citizen. Your religion, your everything possible, we want to strip that away and make you a Soviet citizen. Mm-hmm. That's something that is just as important, because that, you know, the people that, the generations that grew up there, understanding them, I think it's important for us in the diaspora to have more of a sense of like what they went through mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. And it's a different struggle, but it's very, you know, in working on this, I remember asking a friend in Armenia who, you know, I think he's close to maybe mid 50s, close to 60. And I was asking him about growing up in Armenia. And he said, well, what I remember most is there was not a lot of color. Everything seemed gray. Mm-hmm. It seemed like a black and white TV. Like, just everything was just one color of grayness. That's what life felt like. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's, you know, one point of view. But I think it's important to for us to see and hear that story as well as Armenians in the diaspora to know, you know, see what they went
absolutely
through.
Yeah. So now, Can we talk, get a little bit more personal right now? I know you've written one of the books that you've done is What Lies Beyond the Stars. I remember reading it a couple of years ago. It was fascinating for me because it takes place in the Bay Area part of my life that was very important to me, and you captured that so well. But here's the character in the book, and I forgot his name, but he's looking and he's living across the screen of his daily existence. He's a computer programmer, right?
Right, right.
And then what lies beyond it? Who is that person? Mm-hmm. And he comes to find himself. And then I look at the movie and I see Charlie. He's an Amerigazi. He's ending up in Armenia, in his homeland. He's repatriated. He's looking out a window. And it's not about finding himself, but I saw some parallels in these characters. Tell me a little bit about your process in developing these people.
You know, for me, the best kind of art is less about telling people things and more about asking questions, mm-hmm. and exposing those questions that you have in a deep, a way that invites other people to question as well. So, with the novel, What Lies Beyond the Stars, definitely, you know, I feel like growing up, there was a lot of books that I liked that were kind of, I wouldn't say spiritual, but like, Way of the Peaceful Warrior or Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, things that were kind of exploring, like, who am I? Mm-hmm. What does it mean to be alive? And I realize there aren't a lot of books that take on those big questions in an atmosphere of today, mm-hmm. because the struggles we have today are very different than in the 80s or the 40s, mostly because of technology. Mm-hmm. And so What Lies Beyond the Stars is really focused on, kind of the heart of it is about attention and what is a guy struggling with. On one side, you have attention is the new sort of money, a commodity. Mm. That's what technology is. You have companies that are worth $1 billion and haven't sold a thing.
Right.
Why? Because they got 1 billion eyeballs. It's all about attention. And right. I want to do everything possible to get people's attention. Well, on the other side, you look at any religious practice, you look at Christianity, like what's at the heart? Is prayer, is the using that attention, meditation. Mm-hmm. There's spirituality from a practical standpoint is really about, it's a work with your attention and taking it away from those distractions and giving it to God or bringing it into yourself. And today, when everything out there is trying to steal that away from me, mm-hmm. I think this is kind of the heart of a struggle that, I felt, and I feel like it's, I see it with more in younger generations, but that is a spiritual struggle. Mm-hmm. And it's a hard one. It's a really hard one. And there's no textbooks out. So I was trying to write about it, to explore it and kind of see what that struggle is,
You do exactly that because you put us all into those positions, whether it's sitting across the screen and going through it with the character there, or even in the case of Charlie, as you were talking right now, mm-hmm. I'm thinking, yeah, we're there. You've created that environment where I'm standing in that room with him, and I'm, like I said earlier, I'm questioning myself, would I go through this? Mm-hmm. What would I do to define myself, or do we just chuck it all and say, I'm not going through the, keep your country. Right. I don't need identity that bad. But that quest for understanding who we are, what we are,
right.
What we're doing here, why am I here? It's more than just the things that I've got, the possessions that I have. Yeah. I'm a person, and I'm yeah. defining myself within these parameters. It gets into the whole idea, too. When I was watching it, I was thinking about, well, there goes the whole argument against globalism, because this guy is like, he definitely wants to be within these parameters, right? He doesn't care about how it's going to work with everybody else. This is my life. I'm going to define it here. Mm-hmm. And that's something. So I was asking more on a personal thing. I know you've directed big actors like Kirk Douglas. I think that was fantastic when you mm-hmm. did Illusion. I'm going, wow, you know. This one you directed yourself. Mm-hmm. What did you learn there? What was the takeaway from directing yourself in something like this and going to Armenia and yeah. your roots?
Well, add on to that, we shot right in 2020,
yeah,
right at the beginning of the pandemic. We were about a week into shooting, and suddenly everybody's going, what's going on? What? And we ended up having to shut down after about, I think, 10 days of shooting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Hovik Kushkarian, he's Spanish-Armenian. He had to go back to Madrid. We had some Russian actors that had to go back to Moscow. And then, you know, the travel ban and everything locked down. And, you know, I think I spent a good 2 months just waiting before we could shoot some more. Mm-hmm. So it was quite a wild experience. We did our best to do what Charlie is kind of doing in the film, which is, okay, how do we, this is awful, and we could cry about it, but is there an opportunity here? Mm-hmm. Is there some way to take the hardship that's going on and go like, well, and there was, time after time, there were things that actually made the film a better film. Mm-hmm. Every time something, you know, disastrous happened, you know, I had actors that were meant to be in the film that helped me kind of get financing for the film who dropped out. Mm-hmm. And I was like, but it ended up turning out better. The people that I ended up getting were, you know, perfect for the roles that they played. The pandemic happened and we had to be shut down. Well, you know, a lot of our sets weren't done. And so in those 2 months while we were waiting, the set designers would sneak up to the set and work on the prison cell or the prison exterior. So we got even better sets. And then, you know, I ended up, after about 2 months, the government finally allowed us to shoot more. But they said, okay, you can only shoot. There's a portion of the film which is just mostly me as an actor in the cell. And they said, you can do that as long as it's only a few people and a few crew members, because they were being cautious. You know, everybody was supposed to be isolated and right. this and that. Well, it ended up helping me as an actor and what the role is, you know, both from the standpoint of, when we finally got to shoot, everybody was so happy to be working just to get to do, you know, mm-hmm. we were all stuck in an apartment for 2 months. You weren't supposed to go outside. You weren't supposed to. And just to be able to see other people and say, hey, and okay, we get to work. We were so, you know, it was probably my most memorable day on a film set was that first day back. Mm-hmm. Everybody just appreciated being able to do what we love. And that, all of that helped play into, for me as an actor, mm-hmm. What I had to do for as an actor in the film. But yeah, directing myself, I started directing because I love acting. I love working with actors, mm-hmm. and there's not a whole lot difference for me between directing two other actors or directing when it's me and you acting. Because mm-hmm. I look at it all, you know, film is a very collaborative art form. It's not, you know, there are some directors who are like, I'm king, and But I go, okay, you know, my cinematographer, I know nothing about lenses or any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. I rely on him. Mm-hmm. And I go, look, let me share all my ideas, what I think. And I, you know, let him, you know, I want him to bring as much as what he, as much as he has to the table. So in that, directing myself, it's not that, it's not like hard or anything, because I'm actually, it's just where I'm standing almost. I'm standing in front of the camera or behind the camera. It's kind of the same thing.
One more personal thing I noticed at the very end, you dedicate this movie to Manu. Is he, did he go through this experience? Why him?
Yeah, no. So Manoog is my grandfather, who I was fortunate enough to know. I think he died when I was about 14, something like that. My grandmother unfortunately passed away before I was born, so I never knew her directly. Mm-hmm. These are my Armenian grandparents. So So my grandfather, kind of because, you know, he's sort of the boy in the box for me. Mm-hmm. He escaped the genocide, or he actually left earlier than a genocide, but similar experiences in terms of, you know, the story I was told is he was a bit of a wild kid and he would steal the pasha's horse to ride down to the river or something. So Turks came to the village and said, you know, where's Manoog? We're going to kill him. And so that's why he had to get out. They helped get him out. And he ended up in America. So it's dedicated and partially for that, but more because I think my relationship with him, he always encouraged me to smile and encouraged me to be happy, you know, be positive. And this is a guy who went through horrible stuff,
right?
You know, and same with my grandmother. Mm-hmm. So I think it was his outlook that made me want to dedicate it to him.
And it comes out in that writing too. It's beautiful. What's the takeaway for people? What do you want them to take away from this film when they sit and watch it? The general population, they're gonna say, I understand that recently you've talked over with some big distributors.
Yeah.
So this is going to be in theaters.
So yeah, the film didn't come out last year. We just premiered it at the Golden Apricot Festival, and then we've since been going to festivals, and we'll continue to go festivals until later this year. Then yes, it's not official yet, but we have a distribution deal that hopefully either in the spring or the fall it'll be in theaters in the United States. So that's still in the
So the general public, United States, who's consumed with action thrillers and bombs and everything, is here's a guy. What do you want them to take away? What do you expect they'll take away?
You know, there's a lot of movies and a lot of Netflix and there's so much. And a lot of it is, you know, I watch stuff because I want to escape or I want to, it's entertainment. Well, film, in my opinion, is also an art and can be an art and can be a vehicle for almost like food, giving people something. And when, you know, I've gone and seen, you know, watched a show or whatever, and afterwards I feel like, oh God, I want to take a shower. Like the food I'm getting is just so not serving anything.
Yeah.
And so I've always gravitated towards making things that would, one way or another, elevate people. Or give them something that is validating about being a human being. Mm-hmm. So I think with this film, I hope, you know, there's room for every kind of, there's room for horror films and all kinds of films. They don't all have to be the same. there's not a lot of films these days that are doing what I'm trying to do.
Right.
I feel like there's a lack of them, and that's one of the main things we've seen at these festivals is people come up and go, I haven't seen a film like this in years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I, you know, what, how a person feels after they see a film, it's not just entertainment.
Right.
And that's why I got into filmmaking and acting was, you know, seeing films as a kid and being just inspired to be and do, you know, that to me is, that's so important and valuable. And so I hope that at least some people out there see Amerigazzi and have that feeling.
Definitely. I think you've hit it exactly on the head. It's really about life more than just the entertainment. I always think about in Superman movie when the young Clark Kent is telling his father, Jonathan, you know, Dad, I every time I get that football, I know I can make a touchdown. I know I could kick it over. I can do it. And he just looks at him. He says, there's a purpose you're here for. And I know it's not to make touchdowns. And with all due respect to every football player, yeah, thank you. But there's something bigger here. And, yeah. And I think you're hitting that as a director, as an actor, as a creator. You're definitely doing some beautiful work and want to congratulate you and wish you all the best.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us today. Yeah. It's been an enlightening morning. Thank you. God bless.
Thank you.
A little Gomidas Vartabed to round off the day. That is Armen Babakhanyan playing on a double CD album called Piano Works. And I'll have a link on today's show notes. I hope you enjoyed today's interview with Michael Gourgian. It was a fun one, and especially for me. After seeing the movie, I had a chance to see it. It's pretty intense, and I highly recommend it. When it comes out, hopefully it'll be out soon, and we'll have some more reporting on that as well as it does come out and makes its way to venues where you can see it. Right now, here's Susie to make her announcement. I'll be back with some parting shots.
This is Susie for In His Shoes Ministries. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I wanted to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. Epostle.net is the voice and expansion of In His Shoes Ministry. We are committed to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. Your donations help us expand and deliver this message to a waiting world. Please support us by pressing on the donate button at either the inhisshoes.org website or epostle.net. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that message. And thank you, all of you, for all of the beautiful notes, the messages you send my way, your prayers especially for this ministry. We are on epostle.net. That is the mothership. And we have daily shows. We have weekly shows. We have this podcast and some really, really exciting new videos coming out. Actually, next week with the Lenten season beginning, we're doing an 8-part series
watch for that. It's called, I think right now the working title is Lent A to Z, but it should premiere Friday, exactly a week from tomorrow. Yeah, February 17th. So look for that. That'll be coming out on ePostle. And then we have our big annual conference, and that's called Reclaim. This year we're doing Reclaim a voice for the world, a voice for the hurting, the voice for the lonely, the voice for the children. It's going to be an exciting one. It's March 25th. Mark it on your calendar. If you can make it out to Burbank, you know, buy, steal, cheat, do whatever you can to make it out to Burbank to be with us. If you can't, we're working on doing some streaming for that day. I'll have more details in the next few weeks. And then we've got an exciting one for you. February 26th. That's a Sunday. We're starting a new program. It's like a 10-15 minute small little service, and we invite you. It's online. Takes place 5 o'clock on Sunday evenings, 5 o'clock Pacific time. So make sure you calculate it. It's really easy. Just go to Google and say, what time is it in Southern California? And you'll figure it out, okay? Wherever you're at, you'll be able to connect. It'll be streamed and on live YouTube. But it's basically a small little service, 10-15 minutes long. And this is inspired and pushed by some young people who want to see our services being accessible to everybody. Not necessarily a 2-3 hour service that you see on Sunday, but Sunday evening. We're calling it Giragi. And there'll be a link on today's show notes so you could check out a small little promo as well. Please watch it and join us. Mark your calendar. So that's February 26th for that one, March 25th for Reclaim, and just every day for epostle.net. All right, that does it for our show today. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. I want to take this opportunity to remind you next week, okay, we'll be talking about the earthquake and our immediate response in his shoes. If you're inclined to donate, please make a donation at inhisshoes.org, the website, or at epostle, and just mark it off as earthquake relief. We do have people in Turkey, and that is the Armenian Patriarchate, who we've made arrangements, and every dollar that you send in goes there for relief. All right, that does it for this week. On behalf of my producer, Susie, and myself, this is Father Voskin. We look forward to seeing you again next week when we will take the next step.
Stand by for disclaimer.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Epostle.net. Apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding.
Off balan top, let it.